WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm back in the homestead doing my thing. I am unmasked like a Kiss album. I got my Maryland Lottery mask out. We're going to be getting ourselves back out on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We'll be letting ourselves play at Mama's on the Half Shell on March 4th. I'm going to have a crab cake, probably some oysters, and maybe a Bloody Mary, even a couple of beers when we're down there. We'll be getting back out to Fadley's. We're going to be coming back out to State Fair. And I really want to get to El Guapo. I keep telling, we need to have a Mexican crab cake. I'm going to work on a recipe with Evan over at El Guapo. Don, you know, it's been a little while for you and I to have a crab cake, but this is one of your old friends here and a guy that I've read for a long time and been around. And obviously I worked at the newspaper and I take the hard journalism side on this. So I love curmudgeonly lovable, loquacious guests. And at the end of you and me fighting about the Olympics and sports and different stuff, I am glad you have this guy on to talk some sense about not having creeps represent us in politics. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
There you go. Our good buddy from the Baltimore Sun editorial team, Peter Jensen. Peter, did you hear that description? Curmudgeonly.
Yeah, curmudgeonly. First of all, that's more syllables than I expect from Nasty on any given day. So I guess that's good.
I did way better on the SAT verbal than you think I did.
Okay, all right.
I did. I was a writer. They let me into your place. You would have loved me. If I worked for you, I would have been the feistiest. I'd be the best sports columnist in the city if I took it on.
Well, I always say, Nestor, I always say, I kid Peter. I typically will text him. I think I bat about 90%, which would get me into a, you know, at least get me a cup of coffee and a donut, that when editorials that are typically anonymous, now some of the pieces today we're going to talk about were not anonymous, they actually carried his name, but anonymous editorials, I can more often than not pick out the ones that Mr. Jensen has written, because there's a certain edge to them, a smart aleckly. I don't know if I'd call it curmudgeonliness, but it's sort of a...
Well, he called Trump a rat before he committed sedition on the steps of the Capitol.
Yeah, well, right? So, all right, let me back up and say there are no anonymous editorials, because that's somewhat imprecise. The editorials are a product of the board. Each day. But I appreciate that Don is trying to express that when I personally write the thing, sometimes I sneak in little pet peeves and catchphrases.
I call them Jensenisms.
Yeah. Right,
so Jensenisms. One of your recent articles, though, caught my attention because, my Lord, Peter, I think it is something that bedevils our democracy. And I'm not sure we fix it, although you try to lay out somewhat of a game plan to fix it. And what else do we say is what we need to do, how to save democracy in a Jensen way? It's pretty simple. Elect fewer jerks. What was it that morning over your bagel and coffee that you said, damn it, I'm going to write about electing fewer jerks today?
Well, first, let me say that I live in a household where my spouse uses the J word all the time. So it's sort of in the vernacular. So that's there. But also, you know, I remember reading years ago, a terrific Chicago columnist who regretted that reporters never sit around and write as they talk at, like, when they gather at drinking holes after a big event and have a sort of a candid conversation about the day's events, that usually never translates in the paper because it's sort of cautious and sort of journalistic in our
approach. Different than off the record, really, right? Really?
Yeah, exactly. And I think sports actually gets better closer to this than giving people a real peek into what athletes are like, I think, than what we do with politicians. So and then you watch some of the spectacular sort of failings of people who just act like such awful people. Yeah, I think if there's less of that, I think we'd all be better off.
Well, that's what got you invited on. I mean, I saw that and I'm like, time to get Jensen back, talking about jerks in politics. And it seems so obvious, right? It seems, but I mean, on the other side of the aisle, I see this performative thing happening, right? Like where you really need to be an actor to get the gig with a red hat on to some degree. Well, whatever that is, there is a performative part of Ted Cruz and Jim Jordan and winning elections that I see as complete and utter bullshit. That guy has no, that guy's just a liar over. Cruz went to Cancun. I mean, like, and he'll get reelected. So there is a point where we say we want this standard. And my dad's standard was John Kennedy, but he got shot, right? So there was no second act for him with Marilyn Monroe or any of the indiscretions of the time. But my dad sort of held the FDR, and these were family, you know, all checked all the boxes. A father knows best in the 50s and whatever. We're in a whole different place now where you know, the guy in Florida is ordering call girls on his Venmo app, and it's just cool. It's okay. It's just expected.
Well, let me back up there and say that what I find interesting about your comparison is that we find out that often people in public life are less than what we think they are. Those who act sometimes in public spaces virtuous, we find out later when we read their biographies, that perhaps they weren't quite as virtuous as we thought. But what I find interesting is going back to your original observation about the politicians, there's always been a certain amount of, you know, claptrap that politicians spout when it's election time. What's interesting now is that it's not just for the election or for that audience. It's now a full-time political nonsense that they spout, and the Jim Jordan is a great example of that. That he's on point on that same political absolute reality rejecting audience in sort of engaging and exciting high pitch all the time. It used to be a given, whether in Washington or in Annapolis, that you expect a certain amount of that, you know, when you're getting close to an election, that people are going to start doing it. But then the election, post-election, we all come down and have a more rational, normal discussion. That now doesn't happen as much as it used to. Now it's like at that fever pitch all the time.
Well, the woman in Colorado sits in front of a machine gun all day long and spouts things. I mean, right. And the woman down in Georgia, oh my God, I mean, with the camera and the video and the real-time social media has just it's really lowered the bar dramatically. Well,
I want to build on that with Peter, and we will get into some of his ways to evaluate whether or not we can elect fewer jerks. Your number one point, Peter, I think you listed five points. Number one was, does the individual constantly say outrageous things? And we just had recently on the show former Congresswoman Donna Edwards, who is running again to take her old seat back now that Anthony Brown is looking to move to a state office. And Donna recently, we talked to her about it, retweeted something that was so outrageous that I thought it might not be true. So I did what good consumers of social media are supposed to do, try to check it out. And she retweeted a current ad for someone running for office in Arizona, where this Republican candidate, you may have seen it, comes out into the streets of a set that looks like the Old West, takes his rifle and shoots Mark Kelly. Yeah. Now, I can remember I called my wife over.
It's not free speech.
I said to Linda, you have to just look at this for a minute. Now, here's my question, Peter, much harder, I think, than what you said. Does the person say or do outrageous things? That person, I am assuming, has some polling data to indicate that that ad is effective with a certain Arizona voter. And maybe I'm giving the person too much credit, but I'm assuming that to be true. How do we break out of this appeal to a certain segment of voters who want their elected official to do or say outrageous things and not legislate? Because I'm sure you thought about that after you wrote the article as well.
Well, a couple of points. One is, after I wrote that particular column, it was, I got a lot of reaction because it was picked up by a lot of newspapers around the country, particularly newspapers serving areas that are perhaps more Republican leaning. So I had some people disagreeing with my point of view on some of these things. Right. But so I sense that, yes, that people, the reason, one of the reasons, one of the primary reasons politicians take this tack is it's effective, right? If people weren't responding to these, you know, hyperventilating, truth-bending extremist views, then they'd stop of their own, you know, weight. It would just collapse. People wouldn't pursue it. So yes, there's an appetite, but there's always been an appetite for, rogues and ne'er-do-wells and people spouting nonsense. But as Nestor mentioned, it social media has sort of changed it, because there was in traditional media more of something of a gatekeeping going on, and so ridiculous people were treated like ridiculous people at some right. level. And now, with the rise of Fox News and even more extreme versions of the media, they get a much broader airing. They're treated much more seriously, and given much greater respect than should done by intelligent people previously. Up that function, sort of that's one of the impacts, I think, of the traditional media losing its impact, that you now have an opportunity to take advantage of an unfortunate element of human nature, which is our willingness to disbelieve.
How do we break, Peter?
Our willingness to, prejudices are confirmed.
How do we break through this? Is the only way, one of my premises has been, and you've covered this a long time, you've covered me, you've said nice things about me and my bosses, you have said not so nice things about me and my bosses occasionally, we've had some lively discussions, but one of the things that I believe the only way out of this is to have the electorate make it clear the kinds of behaviors that they won't tolerate. Because I do believe elected officials, and this goes to Nestor, I think your Ted Cruz question. To me, I think Ted Cruz has calculated, because I don't think he stands for anything. So I think he has calculated that siding with crazy is still good politics in Texas. Josh Hawley is a Harvard-trained attorney. He's not an idiot. He's not a fool. He has calculated that standing with fools and fist-bumping the Proud Boys resonates with a certain voter. I believe, and react to this, Peter, if you think if I'm right or I'm wrong, I believe that if somehow it became clear that those kinds of candidates could no longer win and that the rational voter was going to stand up and be heard, that the Cruises and the Hawleys would quickly become as rational as we could see, because they stand for nothing. So is the answer to have the electorate make clear what they will and won't stand for?
Well, Don, I wish I could say I have full faith that people will come to their senses. But right now, it doesn't feel like, one, people are getting properly informed about exactly who it is they're supporting, because they're only hearing one. I mean, I guarantee you the folks who vote for Josh Hawley don't hear about him fist-bumping Proud Boys. They are not part of the conversation about that. They don't know. And in that sort of vacuum, they're willing to believe the stuff they do hear, which is that he's fighting against the liberals, the in the mainstream media, and all the usual villains that are trumped up on the in the sort of the partisan media, and they don't. I don't know how they can decide to vote against someone that they don't really know that side of it.
Do you buy into, Peter, and I want to touch on some of the other points that you made and have you elaborate on them, because you only get to say so much in an article. Yeah. Do you buy into the what I think now is sort of a common theme that had Fox News existed during Watergate, that Richard Nixon would have come through that unscathed if we had the same echo chamber that we have today? As a semi-historian, do you buy into that?
Well, it's not that simple. I think that you watch sort of what people think is, you know, how they look at right and wrong, the norm versus the extreme. It's an evolution of things that has to happen over time. If Fox News had started, you know, 20 years earlier and developed its following in space, and then you got to the moment of Watergate, yeah, I actually do. But if just instantly you had Fox News, then you still had people who would have been so appalled by, I mean, you know, remember what Watergate was to me, the moment, the tipping moment for Watergate was the tapes and the finding out that Nixon's private conversations were so, you know, like outrageous, and I think any public residual sympathy for him was gone. Today, if a tape like that came out, it would just be seen as like a Trump being Trump.
Peter, Trump calling Georgia and trying to get the election.
Yeah,
vote?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, or go back. Right. I can remember. I'll give you a quick real life moment. In the 2016 campaign, it was, 6 weeks? I don't remember the exact time frame, but roughly 6 weeks, I think, before the election. And the famous Access Hollywood tape came out with Billy Bush on the – and it came across my news feed. I quickly went to my computer in my office, looked it up, walked down the hall to one of the other senior advisors, and I said, pull up your computer machine. And both of us said – well, this is it. Thank God we're going to be saved this nightmare, because no one will be able to survive this.
Right.
How silly were we?
Yeah, that was that. I mean, that's like an obscure fact from that campaign. Now it was news for a week, and then we went on to the next.
There was another segment on the other side of the Hillary, her emails, all of that at that point. We've spent the afternoon talking to Luke Broadwater, who I think you know well, about tapes and burner phones and like all of these issues that have gone on from January 6th. And I
clogged toilets.
Is he going to jail? I keep asking, is he going to jail? And they're like, well, you can't put him in jail because that would just anchor his base. And I'm like, but he's a criminal in plain sight. We've lost sight of that. Like, you can be a criminal and get away with it. You can put your family with machine guns and with Christmas cards and get away with it.
Yeah, I must say, the January 6th investigation, I wish I could say how that's going to go. It is an interesting exercise, an important one, and yet I can't help but feeling the end point on that is going to be very unsatisfying.
I could not agree more.
That you're going to discover all these things, you're going to have a full understanding of these sort of the way members of Congress and the White House were co-conspirators in this attack, and there will not be satisfaction at the end, because I suspect Congress will change hands in the next election just based on historical patterns, and the whole matter will probably that investigation will be dropped, and I don't think the Justice Department will be in a position to do anything either.
Could not agree more. We're with Peter Jensen, longtime Baltimore Sun columnist, editorial writer. Peter, one of the other points that you made in the article, and it's interesting, Nestor, this is a point that you've made many times about people, and I'm going to tell a story about you once Peter weighs in here. You may not even remember it, but one of the points you raised.
I might not like it.
And no, you will, and it ties right in with what Peter wrote. You said, Peter, we ought to ask, is the person running for office curious about the world around them. Tell us what you meant by that, because I've heard that from our good friend Nestor Aparicio. What did you mean by that?
Well, there's a big difference between people who look at the world and look for patterns to make the world fit their previous existing perceptions of it. And there are people who are authentically interested in finding out what's going on, who don't, who can have an open mind about things. And the classic example for me is to hear people debate about complex matters like climate change, like
vaccines,
public safety. Okay, right. Vaccines. And they are, and some people are just not interested in finding out how things work. I am amazed by the conversations that have sprung up again on Fox News about just this idea of the pandemic. You know, we have experts on all the time on these various cable shows. You read about them. And so the public, you would think, would be fairly well informed. And yet they'll look at, you know, changes in CDC advice that are clearly based on evolving science as, aha, it shows you that they were deliberately misinforming us and playing politics. And I think it's clearly someone's playing politics, but it's not the scientists. And I'm just appalled that that must play well, or else you wouldn't hear that either. I mean, that some people, I guess they're just so frustrated with the, I mean, it's been 2 years and they just don't want to believe that this is a threat, or that we have to get vaccinated, or we should wear masks under certain places. And so they'll just be sucked into this kind of conversation. And I'm appalled.
Well, you live, well, maybe you don't, maybe you don't. I don't have all the maps necessarily in my head, but you live not far. Are you in the first district, Peter?
I am not in the first district. No,
not in the first congressional, but not far from you. You've written about the first district as well.
Yes, I have lived in the first district.
And you have lived. Obviously, I know that district's moved around. You followed Andy Harris for a long time, from when he was in the state, you know, legislature to now. Again, I think we come back to this thing. What is the appeal of someone who is on the front? I mean, he is in the Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan wing of the Republican Party, yet lives in Lutherville in Baltimore County. I mean, what am I to make? What did you make of that when you wrote about Andy Harris and the realities of the first district?
Well, I again, having lived in the first district, in fact, one of my first jobs in journalism was as editor of a weekly paper on the Eastern Shore. So I was really in the heart of the first district. And I was there when the whole...
What town were you in?
I'd be interested to see if you've ever been there. I was the editor of the Federalsburg Times.
I've not been to Federalsburg. I have not.
Okay, there you go. Well, Federalsburg is in the south end of Caroline County, the Green Garden County, as we call it. And used to be famously a hub for the Eastern Shore's vegetable growing businesses, which, as you know, and have gone the way of the dodo. So it's a struggling small town with some, you know, some poultry influence and
by the way, I totally drove through there because it was south of Denton. It was really, really hard to get a crab cake in that county. There were only a couple of places. There were more like roadside shacks. I wound up getting one at downtown Denton, though, which was lovely, by the way.
Yes.
And a great cheeseburger.
Well, I was eventually editor of the county record in Denton, too. So I was, which is now called the Times Record because it merged with the Federalsburg Times. But that's a county that is fascinating in its own way. But
Very close to Suicide Bridge with another great.
That's president. Right. Secretary. Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
So you've been around.
Well, I told you, Dom, when you want to go over there, you go and you wait for the Confederate flag that's really big and you make a left and then you see the Trump flag. And then somewhere near there, there's usually water and good crab.
So, right. So pick it up, Peter. There you go. Yeah,
I'm going to let you know that I've been there.
Okay. All right. Good. Very good. So anyway, And I was there when the whole Bob Bauman thing exploded. So I know how conservative the district is. But what I find interesting about Andy Harris is it's, he almost treats it like a cartoonish level of conservatism. It's like, you know, whenever he can go all the way, he chooses that. So I think he misrepresents the district in that I think there's a lot of interest, for instance, in cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay. I think in promoting tourism, in helping people who are less fortunate. I think all these things, which he has no interest in, actually, I don't think the people there are quite that way. But what they are is I think they are reactionary, and they've been sucked into the same sort of us versus them polarized politics that everybody else has been sucked in. And so he takes advantage of that by being the obvious, you know, anti whatever Democrats are for. And that has played well for him. I'd be curious to see if, you know, whether, you know, post-Trump, there's still the same appetite for it, and particularly with the redistricting effect, if that follows through.
Now, it will be very, very interesting. Peter, before we let you, and again, if you're not reading Peter Jensen, go out and find him online at Baltimore Sun. Go out and just Google Peter Jensen. Great
article.
Can I
give him a couple of quotes, or you want to take us in a different direction? Where are you?
No, you go ahead, man.
No, I want to have some fun with this because, like, having great writers on and people that don't know that I had, like, have more than four syllables. I've got a great quote from a Rush song, and I'm a huge Neil Peart fan. I don't usually quote Rush, but I want to quote it for you. All those things you just mentioned, there's a line in a song called Witch Hunt. Quick to judge, quick to anger, slow to understand, ignorance and prejudice and fear walk hand in hand. So I think the appeal to people who want to be angry is very, very, I do Baltimore Positive, and sometimes Don and I get sideways on how positive I am. I think it's more Baltimore Honest, but I think there's a point where that side really is, I see what Fox 45 does. They're looking for that angle, and the crowd loves that. And I also have another quote, and I pulled this one up because this goes back about 5 minutes in our conversation where you were talking about media. Have you ever read the Carl Sagan quote from The Demon Haunted World? Have you seen that one? Because I'll read it to you. But this, I've shared this one several times. I began sharing it before Trump was elected, if I go back on my Facebook page. I'll read it, and you tell, this is Carl Sagan, who I once met at a Peter Gabriel concert at Merriweather. I have a foreboding, and he wrote this in the 1996, this was published. I have a foreboding of an America in my children's or grandchildren's time, when the United States is a service and information economy, when nearly all the key manufacturing industries have slipped away to other countries, when awesome technological powers are in the hands of very few, and no one representing the public interest can even grasp the issues. When the people have lost the ability to set their own agendas or knowledgeably question those in authority, when clutching our crystals and nervously consulting our horoscopes, our critical faculties in decline, unable to distinguish between what feels good and what's true. And I think that's the key part. What feels good and what's true. We slide almost without noticing back into superstition and darkness. The dumbing down of America is most evident in the slow decay of substantive content in the enormously influential media. And this is 1996. There's really no internet yet. Just there. There's AOL. You've got mail. Lowest common denominator programming. Credulous presentations on pseudoscience, which we've seen in the last 2 years, and superstition, but especially a kind of celebration of ignorance. I would say, you know, and I've shared that a few times, but I would say when you're saying I'm not getting vaccinated, and in some states, 40, 50% of the people have said that, that is a celebration of ignorance. That is a denial of science. That is, I'm going to do what feels good, which is go indoor without a mask in the middle of a play. Peter, I just wanted to throw that out because all the things you talked about really led me to, that's one of the wisest paragraphs I've ever read from 27 years ago from a very, very wise man.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I have not read that one. And I, that, it's stunning to think how that could have been written today and be just, if not more meaningful, because it speaks to this very dilemma. So that's great.
Well, he goes on to talk about the number one video cassette is Dumb and Dumber, and the number one TV show was Beavis and Butthead at the time. And this is, those were his reference points to say.
Should have told us something, right?
Yeah, should've maybe you should have. Peter, Don, I know you wanted to go in a different direction.
I just real quick.
I didn't mean to bring the show down.
No.
I just wanted to add
great.
A little. People smarter than me. Neil Peart, Carl Sagan, way smarter than me.
Yeah, no. I just, before we let Peter run, I know he's got to get back to work and write some more good stuff. Peter, we got, for first time in a long time, that the three major constitutional offices in the state are going to turn over. We're going to have a new governor.
Yeah.
We're going to have a new controller. We're going to have a new attorney general. What do you make of those three races? I'm sure you're beginning to think about them and you're paying attention. How do you see those races breaking down at this point?
Wow. I wish I had great insight to offer you on that, Don, because I don't know. It is, I'm fascinated. I paid the most attention, of course, to the governor's race, and it's, you know, I can pick, you know, the at the moment where the top three or four are.
Sure.
But I don't trust myself to know what things are going to look like in late June versus today. There's a lot of road to cover. And so I don't know, the AG's race, should be really interesting. And even, I mean, I feel like the comptroller's race is probably a little more clear than the others, but it is having all three open like this, that is a rarity, and it should be quite, for political observers, this is a big year.
The
and
governor's the side of this, it's fascinating, right? Like, as we sit here, I don't know that I could put a dollar on anybody and say, I think this person's going, they all think they're going to win right now, right?
Right.
Literally.
Yeah.
Well, and again, full disclosure, I always try to be transparent here that I have publicly endorsed Wes Moore. So I want folks to know when I make comments about the gubernatorial race.
I want to be really clear that I have not publicly endorsed Heather Mazier, but I'm about to.
But there you go. And I've also endorsed Katie Curran O'Malley and Brooke Learman. Part of my feeling, it's not certainly the only reason I think that Judge Curran O'Malley and Delegate Learman are outstanding candidates, but I also have a belief that we need more female representation at the upper levels of government. I think we benefit. It's not the only reason. There are many other reasons, but I do think that is important. Peter, while not picking a winner in the horse race, the common wisdom at this point, I think, tends to believe that the controller has a floor and a ceiling. And that, you know, the floor may be 23, 24, and the ceiling may be 28, 29, perhaps 30. And the question becomes whether someone out of the next tier of two or three, whether that field can consolidate, because in a consolidated field, I think there's a general sense that the controller's ceiling would keep him from being elected. Do you buy into the floor ceiling perception that people have of the controller?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's pretty clear that his strength is going to be in the primary, is in the non-traditional subdivisions, the places where Democrats probably won't do that well in a statewide contest, but could, because the field is so crowded, make a huge difference in the primary. And he has worked that field, in many cases, there's a lot of fields in those areas, really hard for years.
But a lot of those people can't vote for him, right? Literally.
Well, that's true, but there are still Democrats there. You'd be surprised. Some of those rural counties on the Eastern Shore still have Democrats outnumbering Republicans in registration, even though they tend to elect Republicans for office. It's just a vestige of how the Democrats used to be the rural.
That they want to vote in the spring.
And Joe Biden did much better on the shore than people had anticipated. So it will, as you said, the controller's been going through those fields for a long time. There are a lot of medallions sitting in desk drawers that the controller has given out.
Exactly.
It will be interesting. Peter, we hope we can have you back on regularly. You're a terrific contributor and love to keep reading your stuff. So thank you.
Medallion. That's hilarious. I think I have one of those.
I'm sure you do.
Peter, I appreciate you coming on. I hope sometime we get a crab cake someplace locally. I'm going to be out doing a whole bunch of stuff here in the spring. And you eat crab cakes, man?
I will advise you on crab cakes. I've sworn off them because of shellfish allergy. But other than that, I do remember where some of the great ones are. So
I'll get you a salad or soup or something, but we'll get together. Peter Jensen of the Baltimore Sun, go follow them and hang in with Don and I as we gather with former Congresswoman Donna Edwards, who's running for office down in the 4th. Also getting together with Luke Broadwater, formerly the Baltimore Sun, now at the New York Times, doing all things January 6th and insurrection. And a pretty spicy, sporty Super Bowl music Olympic version of the recon. We're going to get back out and start the Crab Cake Tour, all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I've got my my El Guapo shirt on. I don't think they have a crab cake on the menu, but I'm going to add one. I'm going to talk to Evan about that because I need some tequila with my crab cake on the Crab Cake Tour. We're getting back out in March, starting it at Mama's on the Half Shell in Canton, starting back in Baltimore City. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, quoting Sagan and having Jensen. We are BaltimorePositive.com.